when you get the opportunity to fish open water and there's going to be snow, it can be lights out.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
So how are you?
I'm good. I got to tell you about, and this is backing up a little bit, right around Thanksgiving time, my son was coming out for a few days to deer hunt. Also wanted to fish a little bit because that is the time of year we always allow a day or two to get on the water together because the smallmouth bite, the water temperature has gotten down to that magic number and the bite can be fantastic. Now, I was out 2 days before he got here and checked an area I had not fished in a while. In my creek, the water temp was perfect, low 40s, and they were in that transition. I mean, they'd already been through the transition. They were set up in the wintering hole. They were not locked in to the bottom of it. They were in that area, but they were moving about and feeding still. And I hit it just right. I caught 57 smallmouth in 7 hours before he got out, a couple of days before he got out here. And although that was a fantastic day, red letter day, 57 smallmouth in 7 hours, it was on. My only concern was that I had roughed him up too much before he got here. However, that was not the case.
What do you mean? How could you have roughed him up too much before he got here?
It's not a giant area. And that's a lot of fish. So, I mean, I saw him out the lot, 57 smallmouth. That's 57 more that may not want to bite because I already tricked him once, you know? Trick me once, shame on you. Trick me once, shame twice, shame on me. Anyway, we go back there, and the deal was it was supposed to snow that day. And, oh, man, we were only out for 3 hours. We had to wait till the temperature came up enough so our line would not freeze in the guides. And we got out there. It snowed the first 2 hours and 45 minutes of this 3-hour trip. And at one point, it was coming down sideways. But I will tell you this. When you're fishing open water and there's snow in the air, it's because the barometer's falling. Yes, there's a front coming through. In this case, it was a warm front. Yes, with snow. But the barometer dropped. And the thing is, the difference between when it drops with rain and when it drops with snow is unreal. And I'm sure there's some fishermen out there listening that have experienced this. When you get the opportunity to fish open water and there's going to be snow, it can be lights out. And it was, as much as I had beat them up 2 days before I got there with my son, he had fish on, I think, a second cast. He had two in the boat before I ever hooked up. And we had four doubles that day. And we only fished 3 hours, but we landed 34 smallmouth. So we were on par to beat the day I had. Although 57 in 7 hours is a remarkable day, if we maintained that pace, we would have had 68 in 6 hours, and we would have broke 70 in 7 hours. So it was just as good, if not slightly better, the day that he and I were there. Although that was two people fishing, not one. We could do no wrong. And some of those fish were just absolutely slamming the daylights out of it. It was awesome. So the thing I want to put out here to everybody is, if you've never done it, but you get the opportunity with open water to go out when there's going to be snow forecasted, do it. Because you could have one of those days that you'll likely never forget. And it's happened to me a lot because I know about this. I learned about it back when I was in my 20s. I experienced it then, and I do it when I get the opportunity because I know it can be lights out. It's not a guarantee, but it's a pretty good bet that bite is going to be on. So if you get the opportunity to do that, take advantage of it. and drop me a direct message and let me know how it went for you. Now, you had a topic for this particular podcast because of the timing. You want to spill the beans on that?
Well, yeah. It's the holiday season, which, by the way, Merry Christmas, Roy.
Merry Christmas to you, JD.
We're getting out.
Many more.
We're getting out two this month. It's deuces in December. We got two out for the month. It's just been life has been insane. So we haven't gotten a chance to get any out. So apologies to all of you out there. Once again, we're breaking our own rule. We said we would never talk about having too long of a gap in between episodes, but
December is a busy time.
So for this episode, because I'm looking to shop for the most important person on my Christmas list, which is me. What are the three fishing gifts that are on your list for yourself this year?
Okay. Now, you asked me to come up with three things, fishing-wise, I wanted for Christmas. And this is not, again, this is probably not going to be what you expect. They're not standard responses to that question because, to be completely honest, I mean, you have been in my basement. What could I possibly want that I don't already have 20 of down there in my basement, right? That is my happy place, and it is fully stocked and lacks nothing. So I'm racking my brain going, what could I put on a Christmas list fishing-wise that I don't already have? And I really couldn't come up with anything in that regard. So I have three things on my Christmas wish list that are fishing-related, but they are as follows. Number one, I have that brand-new Eskimo Wide One-Man Flip Over Shanty, and I would like for Christmas to go out at least once this year on the ice and have a red letter day to remember in my quiet little private space inside that one man flip over, just whacking and stacking either big bluegill, my big perch, or mega crappie. I want a panfish day in that is one for the books, one to remember, and one that makes me go, that this is why I wanted to get this. Forget the wind, forget that sub-zero cold. I am having the time of my life in this little me space, whacking and stacking fish of my choice. So that's number one. I want a banner day in that, my first season with it. I want a lot of days in it, but I want to have one that beats anything else I've ever done. That's a tall order, but I'm going to put my best effort into it.
Santa Claus is scratching his head right now, that one.
How am I going to do that? All right, now this, and I look for this every winter. Number two, we are ice fishing now. We've got 5 inches and gaining most days. Now, we had some rain and warm temps a while back, but the ice was already established. It was locked up, and it's still locked up. I did have my first ice fishing trip about a week ago, and once you know, my very first fish of the day, about a 2.25-pound largemouth, and I'll shoot you that picture. That will be the picture on this week's episode, and was my first fish of this new ice fishing season. We ended up with 30 fish that day. My buddy caught 18. I caught 12, but we caught 6 different species. And I was running tip-ups and jigging. He was only jigging. But we're jigging with little tungsten jigs tipped with a wax worm, and we both jigged a bullhead. I mean, it happens every once in a while. So that was kind of the unusual catch of the day. But 6 different species. We got largemouth, pickerel, pumpkin seed, bluegill, perch, and those two bullhead. 30 altogether.
So when you're jigging, you jigged a bullhead. You both jigged a bullhead.
Right.
You didn't catch a bullhead. You jigged it.
Well, we caught them, but we caught them jigging, using a little tungsten jig, dropping it down, just doing a lift drop like you work a jig, super slow, and just lifting it up and let it settle back down. And, man, we thought we had an aggressive pickerel because they slammed it and did not want to come in. And then you just work them to the hole and swing them out.
So next summer, do I get to say that I crank baited a bass?
Go for it.
You're out there jigging up those bullhead. I'm going to go crank bait me a bass.
Do it.
Spinner bait me a bass. I spinner baited a few bass or trout today. Spinner baited.
Spinner baited me a pile of bass this summer.
You know, it's better.
I was just reviewing some of my journal, and man, the days I had. It's every year after January 1st, first big snowstorm we get, once I'm done clearing snow, I make some coffee and I sit in a comfortable chair and I open my journal from, it'll be from 2025, and I read every page, go through my corresponding pictures in the photo album, and I relive every day. And right now, there's 122 entries in that journal, so it's going to take me a long time this year, but what a banner year I had. That bass I caught ice fishing was number 1,671 for this year. So
could you... At 1671, could you get to 1700 between now and the end of the year? Are you gonna try?
That gives me 9 days to get that done, and there's a lot going on in those 9 days. I am going to, and this goes in line with what my second thing on my list is, I'm going to be doing a little recon tomorrow morning and seeing if the creek is fishable. It was ice covered, but with that rain, I saw a lot of the ice get washed out. I need to go check the clarity. It was chocolate milk. And I need to go check the water clarity and see if there's ice back on it. Because if I can fish from a boat Christmas Eve day, I'm going to. And I may have a shot at closing out those last 29 I need. But I would have to have a banner day to do that in December. But we'll see. At this point, I met and exceeded all my goals for this year. So 1,700, if that happens, I'll be elated. But at this point, it doesn't need to.
So what's the second item on your list?
Second item, I want one day. We've already initiated our ice fishing season. I want at least one day this ice fishing season before we get to the open water portion of it, sometime January, February, December, where I get to be out one of my small boats, open water, in the middle of the ice fishing season. I try to do that every year. Doesn't always happen. So that's number two on my list. I want one day during this winter when I can get out in one of my small boats and stand up and cast open water.
Okay.
The lake I usually get to do that on had ice. So I don't think that's going to happen this year unless we get a January thaw that takes out a lot of ice. We'll see. I mean, anything can happen and the creek can open up. So those are the two places I check to do that. I will tell you this. I had one year, I have fished in New York State, which is, it takes a lot for this to happen. It used to be December, January, February, they were just off the books. You're not going to get a boat out. But I have had a boat out in every month of the calendar year in upstate New York for a couple decades now. And a while back, February was the only month I had not been out in a boat in open water ever. And years ago, probably 15 to 20 years ago now, we had a day, I think it was February 6th. It was early February, and the creek had opened up, but it was way off color. It was pretty brown and high. But I contacted a friend of mine. I've got a short list. I have three people that I can call and offer an extreme trip to. That's like, hey, have you ever been on open water in February in New York? They're like, no, that doesn't happen. I know where there's some open water. Are you interested? Most people are like, you're out of your mind. But I've got three guys that will say, yeah, you have my interest. And this is a dear friend of mine, Mark Pracker. We went to the creek February 6th, probably 15 to 20 years ago, and had no idea what to expect, but we crushed them. We got, no lie, we got 44 smallmouth. I do not remember how long we fished because of how long ago it was, but I will never forget. We tied. We both landed 22 smallmouth, 44. And I don't think we fished that long because it was nonstop. We could not believe how good they bit in February in that off-color water, but it was one after another after another. Just one of those days that you never, ever, ever forget. And nobody else was fishing. We had the water to ourselves. So that's the second item on my list. I want one day when I can hit open water this winter. Now, the third one, don't get upset with me, but you know I'm working on that kayak project of mine, and I think I'm going to be okay with it. It goes against what I generally do, but because of this, number three on my list, and I think I'm going to have to do this one on my own. I think St. Nick ain't going to be no help on this. I want to win the Crumhorn Classic the first year I go out in my own kayak, because you do that on the 4th of July. And if I can win the Crumhorn Classic.
Hold on. What was that, Santa? He said good luck.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll make my own. Thanks. Because if I can win the Crumhorn Classic on the 4th of July, that will be my Christmas in July. Ho, ho, ho yourself. That's my list. Let's just see how that shakes out.
I guess we will see how it shakes out. Those are very, you'll have to keep track of those.
Oh, yeah.
You'll have to keep track of those. Well,
give me your list.
Well, write this down, Roy. Johnny Morris Carbon Light Casting Rod.
Write this down?
Yeah, write that down.
Like I'm Santa Claus now?
Yeah, exactly. No, seriously, I think I want to check out and see what all the hubbub is. I think that for fishermen like myself, who have fished a variety of different brands and makes and models, I'm always wary of generic anything. Like anything, and I know it's not the same when it comes to fishing, but for some reason I'm always a little bit scared to try anything that has Bass Pro actually on it. Like, what is the difference going to be in the performance between, or even if it's like, you know, name another place. I mean, Cabela's is Bass Pro, but like same from before when it said Cabela's on it, or if it said right. Gander Mountain on it, yep, on the rod. Is that a normal sentiment you think to have at an initial glance on things?
Here's the thing. Like the Johnny Morris, the Bass Pro Shops Carbon Light 2.0 series, the ones that I use, okay? The Carbon Light 2.0 bait casting reels, all right?
Which cost as much as they cost more than the rod does.
Right. They're a very good reel. They're not made by Bass Pro. You know who makes those?
Who makes them?
Lewes, one of the most popular, most reliable, and one of the oldest reel manufacturers there is. There's so many pros that use Lewes, all right? Ever hear of a guy named KVD? Okay, he uses Lewes rods and reels. The Bass Pro Shops Carbon Light 2.0 bait casting reels and spinning reels are made by Lewes.
Do they advertise that?
No, they don't.
Why?
Lewes builds them for Bass Pro Shops.
Got it.
And
makes their rod blanks then?
I'm not positive. I think those are Lewes also, but I am not positive. Don't quote me on that. I've got to look into that. So I really shouldn't say.
I just don't know how much difference I feel between the Lewes and a St. Croix. They all kind of feel the same to me as far as the flex and the feel of the rod. I mean, they both feel great.
It depends on what you're swinging too. If you're picking up a 7-foot medium action with a fast tip in both a St. Croix and a Lewes or a Bass Pro, they're going to feel very similar because it's the same length with the same action.
Right.
But they vary from manufacturer to manufacturer slightly. And a lot of people have their preferences. Now, my son, for instance, he's a huge fan of Cashion rods. My tournament partner, Ryan Coulter, partner for 14 years. We did a couple regionals, the Cash and Rods Tour, and we placed really well in one of them. We got a couple of their rods for placing well. We missed the money by like one spot, but people that finished at the top but just below the money line got to pick a rod of their choice. Now, my son had been in the market for a longer medium light spinning rod and couldn't find one he liked. So, I mean, I had more rods and reels I needed at that point. So I picked out 7-foot medium light Cashion spinning rod for him. I mean, they go for like $180. And I gave it to him and he said, "What's this?" I said, "Well, it's for your birthday. I won this in a tournament. It's one I don't need, so I picked out one that you needed." And he thought at first, "Oh, great. So give me something you don't want." And I said, "No, that's not it at all. I picked out what you were looking for because I know these are very well-made rods." And when he looked it up, he saw how much it cost and started using it, he was like, "Dad, this rod's amazing." I said, "Go, well, good. I have ones that I feel are amazing, and I'm happy with those. I'm glad I picked out one that you really like." He's like, no, I really like this. And he redid his entire rod arsenal with all Cashion rods because he was so impressed with it. So people do have their preferences, and there are a lot of great products out there. And the Johnny Morris casting rods are used, but Edwin Evers uses them day in and day out in every tournament he fishes, and he's a champion. How many tournaments has he won? How many championships has he won? He won the Red Quest. He won the Bassmasters Classic. He's won lots of invitationals and opens and top tier tournaments. He's just a world champion, world class angler. I got to spend a day in the boat with him on the St. Lawrence River, and I fished with, you know, 7 or 8 top tier professional fishermen, world champions. He was the most intense guy I have ever been in a boat with. I mean, I thought I was competitive. Holy cow. He is the most intense guy I have ever been in a boat with. I learned a lot watching, and it was fun for me just to be around a guy of that caliber. He struggled. This was a St. Lawrence tournament, and he had won that event the year before, so all eyes were on him. And day one, he was in the top 10. Day two, I was his marshal, and he ran to a spot, caught a 2-pounder on his first cast, dropped it in the live well, and said, "We'll get rid of that before the end of the day." And that was it for 4 hours. I mean, he didn't even get a bite for 4 hours after that first fish. And the wheels literally started coming off. He was scrambling, not spinning out, but he was running, ram-a-jamming from spot to spot, trying to make something happen. I mean, super intense. And then he hit this one pocket where the current was super accelerated in the middle of the river. And he said, "There's a stretch here. I've got time for one drop." He made a cast, and before he had it halfway back to the boat, he hooked up the 3-pounder in the live well and then had to crank the outboard and run back to the head of that little cut. And he made 4 drifts and had his limit in the boat and then settled down. And I think he culled once, and he was afraid he didn't make the top 50 cut to fish the third day. He did. I think he finished 49th and just made it in. And at the end of the day, he was apologizing to me. He said, I apologize if I was a little snippy today." I said, "Oh, you don't owe me any apology at all. I'm a huge fan. I got to spend a day watching how you react to a situation that I've been in before and got to see how you assess it and approach it. And hey, I'm on vacation this week, all right? You're trying to make a living and feed your family. I got to see one of the anglers I respect the most in a pressure cooker situation and watched him pull it out and get it done." I said, this was awesome. You don't owe me an apology. I want to thank you. So, yeah, that was a great day. And Edwin's a great guy, but he was hands down, bar none, the most intense guy I have ever been in a boat with. He is a mega, mega ultra competitor. So
that how we ended up on that windy road anecdote, I have no idea. But very, very interesting.
The rods that you
yes,
want.
Yes, that's it. Yes, yes, yes. Sorry, sorry.
All right, number two on your list.
In the realm of ice fishing, I'm eyeballing the Norfin Element Plus float suit because that will keep my confidence where it needs to be when walking on the ice that I'm low-key terrified I'm going to fall through. So okay. I think if I have a float suit, it should probably keep me a little less anxious when I'm out there.
I have, for this season, I'm breaking in a brand new Eskimo roughneck float suit. It's got uplift flotation in the bibs and in the jacket, and it's ultra warm, I'll tell you that.
So. Yeah, this one here has got 180 grams of ThermoGuard polyester microfiber insulation.
You're going to be toasty.
You would be toasty in that for sure.
No, that's a good one.
I think it is too. The last few times that I've been hanging out, Wednesday nights, I sometimes go to a buddy's house. He's got a golf simulator set up. Three of us in there are pretty avid fishermen. And so we talk fishing while I'm watching them play golf, which, by the way, I did swing a golf club last week. So the knee is moving along nicely.
Good, good.
But we were talking about, you know, ice fishing, and they're like, you know, because they all want to go up. They all want to go to Crumhorn. These guys are all saying they're like, how do we get up there on Crumhorn? I'm like, ugh.
You need to know somebody.
You got to know a guy. You got to know a guy. But they want to get out there too. And so I was just, they were asking me how deep it was, you know, and I told them, I said, you know, deep enough that you don't want to fall through the ice, you know? And the one guy I was with, he said that he had a flotation suit. He's like, I wear a flotation suit. I was like, yeah, it seems like that's the move I got to make now. I feel like that stuff's, because I'm going out with great guys like yourselves that already have the equipment. I feel like I should dump a little, if I do get my feet wet a little more with ice fishing this winter, I think I should invest in the proper clothing for it for sure. That's what I got.
Yeah, that's a first.
That's yep. What I need.
Because we've got everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got one flotation suit.
So I'll check that out. As far as my third thing that I would like, not to go down the Bilby route as far as you wanting more experiences from Santa Claus, and now Santa Claus just threw his clipboard and walked away. I don't know what's...
Like, you know how much those flotation suits cost? What am I, a millionaire?
My goal in 26, what I would like to do is kind of following your footsteps a little bit and start documenting my fishing days.
That will make such a difference for
you. I think you've broken through my shell of stubbornness with that. I mean, not that I ever poo-pooed it, because I don't. It's just the work. It's the work I don't want.
A lot of work and effort.
You know, there's certainly...
Hands down, a lot of effort goes into that.
The discipline, like, how often do you not want to write anything? I mean, you're so used to it now, it doesn't matter. But I mean, like, did you have a hard time in the beginning trying to get that discipline in place to always record?
No, the longer I do it, the harder it gets, because I like to get as much out of each day as I can. And by the time I finally get back, I have a whole, I call it the program. I have a whole, you know, ritual I go through with this goes here, the boat goes there, you hang this up to dry, all the rods go back in their proper place, all the boxes go back where they belong. So everything is always right where it belongs. Like the dad that had all the tools outlined with a Sharpie on his pegboard, okay? I have a place for everything, and everything must go back in its place so I know right, I can find it blindfolded, okay? So everything gets put away when I get back, and I'm usually late for dinner. I'm usually running behind because that one last cast that lasts a half hour, I just never back when I say I'll be back. So my days are long, and by the time all that's done and put away, I'm like, all right, I'm going to eat dinner, take a shower, and then I'll sit down and write. And you sit down and you go, man, I'm pretty fried. So I'm not fishing tomorrow, so I'll just do my preliminaries. I'll do all my headings at the top of the page about the weather, the barometer, the hours I found, all that preliminary stuff. And then in the morning, I'll get up with a clear head, refreshed, and I'll I'll sit down. Thank goodness I use a voice recorder, because there's so many details I would forget if I didn't use that. And then I write the day out. My kids used to laugh because I would, back when I was doing construction, I would get back and I didn't have the time that I have now. So when I got back from fishing, I would stay up into the, I don't care how late it is, I got to get this written down because I got to work all day tomorrow. And I would actually nod off while I'm writing, still have the pen on the paper, and it would make a slug trail all the way across to the bottom of the page. And I've got journal entries, and I leave them like that because I laugh at myself going, I nodded off writing that, because you can see all these squiggle marks, all I call them slug trails, all the way across the paper where I nodded off. Look, I nodded off four times when I was writing that because I got four slug trails going to the bottom of the page. And then my chin hit my chest and I woke up and kept writing. So yes, it does take a lot of dedication and perseverance to do that. But I have to write down every single trip, because if I don't, then it'll be the lost trip. And I can't have that. So yes, I'm very disciplined with writing it down. And that's what it's going to take. But I can't tell you how many people, the students from the bass club, general acquaintances I've fished with, and people I've that have come to the seminars that I do, that have told me I started keeping a journal. And you know what? It's fun. And I'm remembering a lot more. It does make a difference, and it will make you a better fisherman. It's a real treat to go back and relive those days. It really, really is. It's a tremendous resource. I've got four decades in notebooks. What a resource. What a library. And I always said, when my fishing rods are hung up, I'm going to be the old guy in the back corner of the nursing home with the big ears, sitting in a chair talking to himself with a stack of 60 blue notebooks next to him. And everybody's going to say, who is that guy and what's he talking about? Because I'm going to be rocking back and forth, reading those journals, going, I don't know who this kid was, but he could sure catch fish. I have said that for years, and I hope it's not true. But when I get to the point where I just can't fish anymore, and if I'm like my dad and I lack the mobility, but my mind is still there 100%, I've got all those journals and I can relive any day I want and take myself back in time to, it's just like being there again. It really, really is. And there's so many details about so many stellar days out there that when you read them again, you go, oh man, I forgot about that. And it all goes to whatever detail you want to put in the journal. But what an invaluable resource and keepsake for all that time I spent on the water. It's just like going back in time. It really, really is. They're actually become a treasure for me. And anybody who's done the same thing, I'm sure will tell you they feel the same way. It's all my history there, and it's there at my fingertips anytime I want it.
Well, anytime you want more Roy Bilby, you can slide into his DMs at all lowercase Roy Bilby. See, I got it in before you this time.
Yes, you did.
And we appreciate you guys coming along on this journey with us. We're going to drop a buzzword, journey. Appreciate you being here.
Yes, we do. Thank you so much. We probably won't have another podcast out until next year, but that's okay.
It's only a few days away.
Yeah, it's only a few days away. So Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody out there. Why don't you make a New Year's resolution this year to keep a journal of your own fishing adventures? Because I guarantee you it will help you tap into your angler within.